join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today we have a crew chat. I'm going to introduce you to another member of the Harvesting Nature team, and we've got a good amount of things to talk about tonight, both that are going on in the kitchen and in the world of wild fish and game. So, first off, I guess news for me since the last podcast you listened to, I'm trying to think of. So, I went, did a bit of scouting here up in northeastern Colorado, checking out some antelope spots. So, for us, antelope archery season for over-the-counter opens on August 15th in most of the eastern side of Colorado, so east of I-25. And I'm planning to participate on that. I've been working on my bow skills. I've been trying to find places to go. I went out and successfully located antelope on one of the 10 pieces of property that I located. If you saw, I posted a video of a nice sized buck and a doe out in the field on one of those areas, and super stoked to just be able to drive out there. I think I spent the day, it was probably a 6-hour loop between stopping at places and then getting back on the road. I spent about 6 hours driving around, checking out each spot, kind of mainly checking access points, because a lot of the places are closed until the season opens, which is good. So if you get there early, you get a first start. But it's neat to see the eastern plains of Colorado. So that's kind of what I was up to. I got a little string snap on my arm from my bow, which left a nice little bruise. I don't know.
I saw that. That looked pretty rough.
Yeah, look at it now. Ooh, it's still pretty bad. But nonetheless, new bow, poor form, and a rushed shot left me with that. But been dealing with that. Not that particularly, but just the bow shooting. So took a one up on that today, and went and sighted in my bow and spent about 2 hours shooting, so I'm pretty stoked for that. But I think one thing that I'm really excited to plug outside of my own personal ventures is that yesterday we launched the first ever, for us at least, wild fish and game cooking class. And we titled that project the Harvesting Nature Supper Club. So essentially what the Supper Club is it's an opportunity for you as our listeners, as our followers, as our fans, whatever you want to call yourself, to join into one of these classes. The classes are like $20. They're limited to 20 people per class. And right now we've got five different of our wild fish and game writers, recipe content creators, chefs, cooks, whatever you want to call them. We're going to be teaching classes to include myself. I'm teaching the first one on the 14th of August, which is going to be a venison steak marsala. Really great recipe, awesome to make, super tasty. So if you go over to, we'll put it in the show notes, but you can also do harvestingnature.com/cooking classes, and that'll get you directly access to our schedule. And we plan to do probably, I would say, 5 to 10 classes per month. This first month of August, we're just doing 5, kind of test the water. But we're going to branch out from recipes. We're going to do some butchering stuff. We're going to do some food processing, some canning, some curing. We really got some big plans for this, and I'm super, super excited, especially as we roll into hunting season. And, you know, may or may not have the ability to have like a whole quarter of a deer breakdown, just different things like that. So we'll work on planning those things out and see how it goes. But I'm also stoked about the logo. What did you guys think about the logo?
I like it. It's a cool retro look.
Yeah. Can you give us a brief overview of what it looks like, if you have it on the top of your head?
Yeah, it's like a an old school, like, neon sign, like you'd see, like, over the doorway of, like, a street side restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like a neon sign. It says Harvesting Nature up and down vertically, and then Supper Club along the bottom, and then it's got a what was it, a deer?
It's an elk.
It's an elk. Yeah. Cowboy.
Elk deer. An antlered animal. Yeah.
That was a bit of contention on that one.
The kind of like bucking up and what's that, Corey?
A little bit of contention on that one, on the antlers.
Yeah.
In the developmental phase, it was a toss-up, but
definitely not a moose. I'll say that.
No.
It's kind of like bucking up and looks like it's about to get off into a sprint. It's a cool logo.
Yep, and it's got a cowboy on the back of it, swinging a frying pan in the air.
That's right. Yeah. It's got the cowboy with the frying pan.
We're gonna print it for shirts and stickers. People have already been asking, but I'm waiting for the proofs to come in. And as soon as the proofs come in and I approve, then we're gonna roll out with production on those. So those will be pretty excited. And then there'll be the ability to do a combination, so a package deal. You can sign up for a cooking class and then get a discount on a t-shirt. So that'll be pretty neat too. We also, over on the website that we use to host the class, I posted our cookbook, Eat Wild Game. So if you go over to the same page where we host that, we have Eat Wild Game. The thing that's different is on our website, you can get a physical copy, either a hardback or a softback or paperback, whatever you want to call it. On the cooking class website, you can get the e-cookbook. You ever heard that term before, Corey? E-cookbook?
E-cookbook, yep.
Yeah. I Googled it when I was putting it together, and I was like, e-cookbook, it sounds neat, but I don't know if it's a real word. But it is tonight. We're publishing it live. So anyway, go check that out, the cooking class. Pretty stoked about that. Also, too, if you're interested, you can always buy us coffee. Those links are down in the show notes. $3, $4, $5, whatever you want to pay for a cup of coffee, helps us fuel our adventures both in the office and out on the open plains of eastern Colorado. So I will go to you, Colin. What updates you got?
I actually have a few. Bear season started here just a few days ago. Started back up. So I'll be looking to combine a little bit of bear hunting with my deer season scouting up here. So I have a deer tag for the county that I live in. And there are a few bears around. Occasionally, I guess they wander into town. So I know they're around somewhere.
So you're going to be hunting in town. I picture you scouting from your front porch with binoculars.
Going behind the Main Street Market, and you'll see me back there in camo. But, yeah, I'm looking to combine a couple things there, get some deer scouting in along with bear. Yeah, that should be a good time. And if not, I'm going to end up going down to meet up with Ben sometime in September and help him out with either taking an elk out that he gets for archery season or going for bear again down there.
Nice.
Finally was successful in my nutria endeavor. If people saw that the other day on Instagram and our other social media handles, capped a nutria at about 80 yards. I was pretty proud of it. It's right in the water. I shot it within the first 10 minutes. So me and my buddy from work walked in. It took us about 10 minutes to walk in. It's on a local farm here. And immediately saw it, took the shot, and it took us about 2 hours to get it out because it was in the worst possible place in the slough that it was in, and it has all this like grass around, so any kind of current, wind current or whatever, wouldn't take the carcass anywhere. So we were trying to like toss a rope over to it, toss a stick over to it, trying to find like alternate ways around to get to it. Wasn't working. We ended up sending one person over to the other side. And one person staying on the same side, using the rope and kind of like drag netting it out, and ended up getting it out. But I was pretty proud to finally. That's my third one, but first one since I've really been announcing that I'm.
And do you have culinary plans for this said nutria?
We had talked about it a little bit offline, mostly around the clever names we can come up with it for it, but. I think I'm going to go with some kind of like Cajun stew with it or some kind of Cajun recipe. For those that don't know, nutria are an introduced relative of the capybara. So they were brought to North America to supplement the fur trade in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And then they're originally meant to replace muskrats. And then when the fur trade began to fall apart in the 1940s, a lot of farmers just kind of let them go. And that's why they're invasive. And they're all over the South, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. And then they're in this really tiny pocket of Northwest Oregon where I am. So I'm fortunate, unfortunately, to have them up where I am. But yeah, trying to take care of them. Anyway, back to the Cajun part. That's why there's a lot of Cajun influence with nutria. It's because they're heavily harvested down in the South.
What was one?
We'll see what comes of it.
What was one of the names we were talking about?
Noodles and Nutria.
Noodles and Nutria. Yeah, that was.
And
that was my favorite.
Nachos a la Nutria was another one that I came up with.
They're bigger than I thought they were.
Do something with alliteration. We'll see what comes up.
Yeah, they're pretty good size. Yeah, about size of a beaver, right?
It's a little bit smaller than a beaver. It's right in between a muskrat and a beaver. So there's each one of all three of those look pretty similar. And the way to tell them apart is by the tail. So beavers obviously have the big flat paddle tail.
Mm-hmm.
Muskrats also have a flat tail, but it's thin and it's kind of like a large blade of grass, like a foot or 2 foot long blade of grass. So it's long and thin, but it's flat. And then nutria is like a rat tail where it's round. And then the size, of course. So nutria right in the middle.
So, you know, I wonder if you think back to the episode with Wade and Rachel where we were talking about wild game fats. We spent a lot of time talking about beaver meat, and they were mm-hmm. they were curing and smoking beaver hams and all kinds of things like that. I wonder if you could do a slow smoke on a nutria ham.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely on the list for the future. I'm absolutely planning on going out to get more. I don't know if it's the same type of meat as a beaver. It's a little lighter in color. It's not quite as red as beaver mm-hmm. meat, as the beaver meat that I've seen. So I don't know if the taste would come out any different. Someone told me on Go Wild that it makes great jerky.
Yeah, I saw that.
which is interesting.
It seems like a lot of cutting, little small pieces.
Yeah, I think I'd feel more comfortable throwing it in a slow cooker and killing off any kind of weird diseases or parasites that might be in it for the first time around, at least.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So that was the nutria. I spent a few days this past weekend helping out a local farm pick up hay, put it on a trailer, and then load it into their barn. And that's the same farm that I go goose hunting on. So people looking to get permissions in places, sometimes it just takes a little bit of manual labor to get in someone's good favor. And he said we can go out there and goose hunt whenever we want and come out there for nutria whenever I want. He even offered up a few legs of lamb off the lambs that he's going to butcher this fall. So
sweet deal.
Pretty happy about that. And it's a good workout if you're not familiar. I got some Colorado tags. Justin, you know this.
Yep.
So got an elk and a deer tag. The elk tag is actually a pretty long one. It's an either sex. It goes from, was it September? No, October?
I think it goes September. So elk season opens the 1st of September. And it goes all the way through
January 31st.
January 31st. But it's so the big difference is it's probably one of the most challenging elk tags out there because it's for the Eastern Plains. So. And there's not a high population, and a lot of the Eastern Plains in Colorado is private land. So Colin and I may be setting off on a couple of boondoggles in order to try to fill this.
Yeah.
I have one too.
But luckily I have a deer tag for early November out there as well now. So I'll be taking another trip to Colorado and hopefully double up on some deer and elk.
Yeah. It would be great. Ideal.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'd like to put a plug out there for user-submitted photos. We've been having a couple posts lately about with user-submitted photos. By all means, please send them in. Send them to community@harvestingnature.com. We'll post them up with your tag if you'd like us to tag you in them, and with a little backstory as well. Wildlife photos are really great. It's really great to see what other people are seeing around the country and around the world, and we want to share that with you.
I like the one today. It was the elk swimming across the river.
Yeah, actually, that was one of my coworkers. So they were out doing a law enforcement mission, and as they were pulling back in, they were like, "What is that in the water?" And yeah, there's an elk swimming across the river.
That's pretty cool. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I know. I posted a video a little while ago of a raccoon swimming, and someone was like, "Yeah, you'd be surprised about how many animals can swim like that."
Yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, horses are pretty good swimmers. So
pigs are good swimmers too. Allegedly, yeah,
four-legged animals are good. And then finally, our Facebook community page. Always keep checking out our Facebook community page. Join it. We've got a lot of good recipes going on in there, and a lot of really good content, good conversation. And join us in there too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that was the longest series of updates I've had yet.
Yeah, I know. We've been kind of intermittent with our updates, but they'll start coming more frequently, and I'm excited because I think as hunting season rolls around, they'll be more intense, maybe literally and metaphorically intense.
You mean like intense?
Yeah.
Like T-E-N-T-S?
Yes. Okay. But, good
one, Justin.
Yeah, it's great. All right, Corey, what do you got?
Well, it's... but starting to get into scouting for archery season here in northwestern Pennsylvania. So I was in the woods this afternoon checking out some places and trying to set some stands and get ready and shooting my bow some. I got new arrows from Allen Company. I got their new Razor arrows, and I think they're a bit better than what I was shooting before. I feel like I'm more consistent with them. Which gives, you know, it's nice confidence.
So those are carbon fiber arrows, right?
Correct.
Nice.
I'm still sighting in out a little at the farther yardages, 40 and 50, but I don't typically shoot anything in the woods that far. But the farther you practice, the better you are at the closer ranges. So
the more arrows you lose.
That too.
That maybe that's just me. I lost three arrows today. I found one like probably 70 yards away from where I was shooting, and then I broke two, and then I shot one into the wood post that was holding the target I was shooting at. So it was a rough start to my day.
Sounds like you need to practice some there, Justin.
Well, no, I got better. I sighted in my bow, only to later learn that I probably need to do it again because my peep sight broke. But
that'll do it.
It's like rough going with archery right now for me. But we're going to get there.
Yeah, I got drawn for both of my doe tags here in PA. And then I have a couple special DMAP permits. And then my buck tag, so I can shoot six deer here in Pennsylvania. And then I'm still waiting on the elk draw, PA elk, which is pretty rare to draw.
Oh, when is the entry for that?
You missed it. It was, I think, either the last day of July or the first day of August.
No. Oh, well, maybe next year.
I don't hold my breath for that one. It's pretty rare to get drawn. But yeah, haven't been doing much fishing. It's been like constant rain, so the river's high and muddy. So I can't do any of that. But yeah, that's about it.
Well, with us today too, we have one of our field staff riders, Kayla Bendel's here with us. I'm going to put you on the spot, Kayla, but
good.
Well, welcome to the show. I'm going to put you on the spot. It's pretty common. Corey gets mad at me all the time for doing it, but I still do it anyway. So what's going on in your part of the world? I guess first, what is your part of the world? And second, what have you been up to in the outdoor area?
Yeah, so I am originally from just outside of the Twin Cities of Minnesota, but I now call Bismarck, North Dakota home. So different world than all you guys, I
Yeah.
guess. Hit the fishing pretty hard earlier in the summer, but just been busy with just got back from working our state fair. I work for our game and fish department. So we have a little exhibit up there, couple of weddings and stuff, but been doing unexpectedly, this is what my next story is about, but been doing some cat fishing, which I didn't foresee doing this summer, but it's been a lot of fun. Actually just made some of it for dinner tonight, but
Ooh, what'd you make?
I just fried it,
Ooh,
nothing
that's good.
crazy, with some sweet corn.
Oh man,
But
I love fried
yeah, I
catfish.
haven't eaten catfish before, but it was delicious, and we caught a whole bunch of them 2 weekends ago. So underrated, but it was fun, and they're good. Otherwise, yeah, I guess our lottery systems work a little bit differently. But drew a whitetail buck tag here with a rifle, and I have never shot a buck. Shot my first rifled deer last year, which was a mule deer doe. So hoping to get some antlers for the first
Sweet.
time. Our bow tags are over the counter, so I'll have that. Also headed to Colorado elk hunting, but with a rifle.
Oh, nice. When are you coming out?
My tag's October 16th through the 20th. Haven't planned much beyond that, other than I'm sure we'll try to get there before the season actually starts. But
Sure. Well, let me know when you're coming this way. You guys are stop by, have dinner or something.
yeah, it's
Let's miss
actually
you.
a gal group, three, my cousin and a friend of mine, but three girls headed there elk hunting.
Oh wow, yeah. Stop on by. Everybody's here.
Otherwise, getting anxious here for bird season. I've got a bird dog, so ready to, in like a week or so here, we can start running them on public land again, just because of the nesting season. So excited to get him back out, and then it'll be dove season, duck season, sharptail season, all the things. So yeah,
Wow. What kind of dog do you have?
I have a poodle pointer.
Poodle pointer.
Which I wish I had a better name. They had a better name for the breed, because I feel like it gets lumped in with all the new like poodle crosses, which it
Yeah.
is not. It is a its own
My
breed. But
friend also has a poodle
huh,
pointer.
yeah.
That.
Yeah, really cool dog, super versatile. He kind of does it all.
How's temperament? Are they pretty relaxed? Are they high strung like a lot of other bird dogs?
Yeah, so a pointing dog, so I would say they're like less high strung than like a Wisla or like a German Shorthair.
Okay.
But he definitely has, I grew up with having one lab, and my husband had a bunch of labs, and he definitely has more energy than like a lab.
Ooh,
So kind of
okay.
in between,
Yeah.
but a pretty mellow for like those point high strung pointing breeds. I feel like he's got a pretty good off switch.
Nice.
I don't think my friend's dog has found that off switch yet. She's go, go, go.
Yeah, we're on year four, and it's just starting to settle in. But certainly, like, there's no off switch when you're outside in the field. It's just in the house he's finally settled down.
That's good. I have that same problem with my 1-year-old. He's everywhere, into all the cabinets, all that. Not dog, human. But well, since we're into that, I do have a quick article I want to pitch out one other piece of news that I forgot to mention. So, if anyone is going to be in the greater Denver area, on August 20th, I'm hosting a pint night with the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers at a place called the Dive Inn. That's INN. It's 6 p.m. on the 20th. So, I'm gonna be there, hanging out with everybody, chatting about all the great things BHA is doing. Probably telling some cool stories. Obviously, talking about food and having a few cold, frosty beverages. Planning to do more events with BHA. As my time here in Colorado continues, so but this is the first one, so I'm excited for that. So coming up here in about 2 weeks, and then I want to reference. So we put out an article back. What was it, last week, Colin?
Yeah, I think it was last week.
There we go. Yeah, on the 22nd. Yep. So the headline, feral pigs release the same amount of CO2 as 1 million cars. I don't know. I read the headline and started doing a bit of research. So there was a study that was published, I believe, in Australia. They did a lot of research but around the world, but their specific calculations and all the people, I think the author of the paper were from Australia, I want to say. But I thought it was really cool because prior to reading that, we'd had the conversations with Robbie Sansom from Force of Nature Meats, and we talked a lot about regenerative agriculture, and we really dove into the principles behind regenerative agriculture, and one of those is like the minimized soil disturbance. And so that's where you look at like plowing and tillage dramatically erode the soil and release large amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Well, for you pig hunters out there, what is one thing that wild pigs do consistently and in large areas? Colin?
Dig up the earth.
Yep. Which, if you look at that, if you take that same thought and you apply it to the lesson that we learned from Robbie, that they're basically plowing and tilling the soil. So with that, they're releasing tons of or creating a process which releases. They themselves aren't exactly releasing it, but they're facilitating the process that releases carbon dioxide into the air. So they looked at the entire population of the pig, of wild pigs, and they did a bunch of simulations and population sizes in their non-native distribution areas. So that's Americas, Oceania, Africa, and parts of Southeast Asia. And they basically said that they estimated the amount of worldwide pig rooting to be between 13,000 and 47,000 square miles, which is insane. So the size of Lake Michigan, or the state of Maryland, and that's every year, which that's a lot of pigs. And this is very analytical as you look at the waxing and waning of the pig population, but I don't know. It's just something pretty wild and crazy when you think about it. So then when you take that type of soil disturbance and you link it, you look at it from like a carbon pollution standpoint of like a of tillage and all that, then it equates like 1 million cars on the road, like driving around every year, all year. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to take the scientist's word for it and stuff. I'm not going to go out there and measure carbon and stuff, but I think it's interesting. I think it definitely makes sense. All the more reason to kill more pigs.
Okay. Corey?
Shoot them and eat them.
Yeah. I think that was somebody's comment on Instagram was like the more reason to eat them, which is great. So that just stuck in my mind. I wanted to bring it up in a little more detail. So I don't know that we will see an end to the rise in the wild pig population as it sort of. Their versatility helps them spread across North America, but I would hope in some places that they remain wild pigless. Although people, certain hunters out there will contest that and say that they would love to have wild pigs in their area so they can hunt them despite the environmental damage that they do, which is interesting. At what point does an invasive species gain that like trophy status where you're like looking at it from a standpoint of like, oh, this... you know, this we want this animal here. We don't want to completely get rid of it because of it's got some other benefits too. So
we talked about that with Jesse Griffiths. It's like, yep. It's such a great food source, but at the same time, it's so damaging. So it's like, at what point are people going to start being upset that there's no more, there aren't any more pigs to shoot, or any more nutria to shoot, or whatever invasive species of choice that you have? At what point are you going to be upset that there aren't any more? But that's kind of the goal, is to get rid of them. So it's a it's a conundrum.
Conundrum. But all right. Well, let's chat a little bit about some hunting and fishing and some food here. We'll shift gears off of the updates and the articles. So Kayla, why don't you, if you could, enlighten us a little bit how you got into hunting and fishing and how you found your way into it.
For sure. So, in many ways, I guess, basically just a traditional pathway person, as we often call it. Two older brothers. My parents were divorced, so a lot of time spent with dad was a lot of fishing and then a little bit of hunting. And my mom fishes quite a bit, too. And so just lots of family vacations up north. That's just like generically anytime you go north of the cities in Minnesota, you call it up north. And yeah, just lots of time in the boat. We always had a fall break in October of school and always went ruffed grouse hunting. So that was kind of my only introduction to hunting at the time. Like growing up, I remember being pretty interested in deer hunting, but my dad and brother would go and they would camp in November in Minnesota. And it just didn't sound all that appealing to a teenage girl who wasn't quite like hooked on hunting yet. So just like that physical misery without any real connection to hunting yet just didn't sound that appealing, but I remember always like calling and checking in, and also just didn't have a lot of exposure to firearms. I mean, with the grouse hunting, it's like my dad would just hand me a shotgun and say we're going grouse hunting, and I'd go for the 5 days of the year and then that was it. So I was definitely a little bit afraid of the rifle and just like didn't have a lot of experience with firearms. But later on in high school, my dad and brother found this really cool program where they got access to archery hunt private land, but you had to like apply and show that you had done like conservation volunteer work throughout the year in order to get in. And then a mentor had to be along with a mentee, so it was mostly like parents and kids, but like my dad couldn't go out hunting if he didn't have a kid with him, and vice versa. But you got access to this private land archery hunt, and yeah, the bow just sold me. I think it's just less intimidating. I find that with a lot of other women, too. It just was an easier start into it. Obviously, nicer weather. Hunting in September and October instead of the negative temps that Minnesota Novembers can bring. So, started to get into that. But still, just growing up in the Twin Cities, like, there weren't many peers that hunted and fished, and certainly not female peers. And I played soccer and did a lot of other things. So while I had that exposure and was definitely hooked on fishing, it wasn't like a lifestyle yet. But very much love the outdoors. So I went to school for wildlife biology in Northwest Minnesota in Crookston. And finally, like obviously kids that go to the middle of nowhere in Minnesota to manage in wildlife biology are mostly hunters and anglers. So finally got to connected to some other people that were passionate about this. And, you know, growing up, you're kind of only exposed to what you're around and your immediate family and friends. But just started learning about all the diverse types of hunting and fishing that were out there and getting to know people that did it. So got introduced to waterfowl hunting. I played soccer in college, so I was still pretty busy in the fall. I do kind of regret that I just missed out on some, like, college was the prime time to hunt and skip class. I was pretty busy with soccer, but, like, my dad would come up and help me hang stands, so that was my first, I would go out deer hunting by myself to my stand for the first time in my life at that point, and I remember telling, like, my soccer roommates, like, you guys should probably know where my deer stand is, just so, like, if I don't come back one day. Just driving out to the middle of nowhere by myself. But yeah, just kind of slowly started to build on it more. Shortly after graduating, went to graduate school in Fargo, North Dakota, continuing down wildlife biology. But I feel like there's this big like transition. My first real job, I guess, was with Pheasants Forever in Bismarck. That's what made me move out here. And was getting to do like conservation outreach, holding outreach events for landowners, as well as my first introduction to kind of R3 or hunter recruitment, retention, and reactivation. Mm-hmm. So just kind of this really cool outreach position in Bismarck. And my life's kind of never been the same since, I guess. Decided if I was working for Pheasants Forever, I needed to have a bird dog. So got my poodle pointer, Finley. Worked on training him myself. I mean, lots of input and help from others, but did all of that myself, and was just all of a sudden immersed in this culture of like finally connected to other people that do all these things. And I'm really competitive, so it was just like, if all these other people can do this, I can do this too. And North Dakota is a bit of a hidden gem, I think. I can drive, I mean, I deer hunt, pheasant hunt, duck hunt, like, within 30 minutes of my house all the time. And so now it became more than just, like, a couple trips throughout the year or weekend stuff. It was, like, last year I hunted, like, 4 or 5 days a week because you can go quickly after work or take a half day or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, I just started to get more independent and just more addicted to everything I tried, like, since moving here. I've shot my first doves, first sharptail, first rifle deer, as I said, first turkeys, first of many waterfowl species, and just, yeah, there's just so much to love, and I can't pick one thing, so it keeps me busy. But I feel like in that way, sometimes I consider myself an adult onset, and just that I didn't have exposure to all these different types of hunting and fishing until I moved out here. And also, just like becoming an adult, I guess, and being more independent versus just tagging along with dad and brother. It's a lot of being a part of the decision making, deciding where. I mean, going by myself a lot. So.
So which type of hunting is at the top of your list?
I don't know. I think that the dog has really grown on me, and like I find myself spending. I'm really excited for our sharptail grouse opener, so I find that pulling a little bit away from the archery hunting stuff. Also just cause I'm like you, such a struggle with, bow hunting, but, I don't know. I don't think I could specialize in one thing, I guess. Every time I think like duck hunting's getting harder here, it's just harder to find access. And it always kind of sits back further. And then I go duck hunting and I'm like, just kidding. I can't give it up.
It seems, you know, the upland game hunting with a dog. I've never done it with a dog, so that's pretty unique. It seems much more engaging though, because there's always like something going on, as it seems to me.
Yeah, it's just the connection there between like you and dog and bird is like, I don't know how many times I just like sit there after a successful shot and just am like amazed. It's like it's happened how many times, but it's still just so incredible. And I also like still from my soccer days, I'm pretty into like fitness and stuff. So I like just like endlessly walking around.
Yep. I can relate to that, as can. I don't know if you know or have seen Ben or have talked to Ben. Ben is an aimless wanderer. We were talking through our elk plans here in Colorado, and he's like, I don't know how much mileage you feel comfortable doing, like, you know, like 5 to 15 miles a day. And I was like, yeah, sure, but I don't trust your mileage. And if anybody thinks back to our bear hunting podcast, there was a point of contention amongst all of us where Ben was estimating the distances. I don't know, Colin, how would you describe it best?
In the one day that was notoriously bad, I think he said 3 or 4 times, it's just like a few hundred yards. Like, oh, it's just like 500 yards more. And an hour later.
Oh, yeah,
hour
that's
later,
when we were going up the side of the mountain.
Right, an hour later, it's still, oh, it's like a half a mile more. Yeah. he's notoriously bad at judging distances.
I think we did like 8 mile round trip that day, and it was only supposed to be like, oh yeah, we're gonna run up here to the top of this trail,
quick
just
stop,
check my trail cam, and then we'll just come back down, and I got a couple other places we'll go check out. Well, it was like half the day there.
Quick stop up the hill, see what's up there, and then you know, it'd be real quick, get it over and done with. No, it was ended up being like 5 hours. Thanks, Ben.
But I can relate to the aimless wandering.
Yeah.
Not just because of that, but I'm like a what's over the next hill kind of guy for sure.
Me too.
So, cool. So looking at the bird hunting, that's pretty awesome. I'm excited to get more into that as well. Kind of out here in Colorado, obviously a lack of it in the Florida Keys, but. So at what point did you sort of connect the food aspect of it, or has there always been a connection there? Because you've been sending in some pretty badass recipes here lately.
Yeah, so I guess I would say, again, just starting out with Pheasants Forever, starting to get a little bit immersed in just this new hunting culture that I hadn't really been exposed to, and the food thing started like to kind of really ramp up in popularity and became a big part of a lot of our just strategic ideas and events. Like, we really need to tie in food to gain new audiences. And at that point too, it's like, now I'm starting to finally harvest enough food to actually like do stuff with, I guess. You know, like last year I'd say like the freezer's literally full versus like those first couple years when we shot like three pheasants and a couple ducks. So actually having a lot more food. But then when I like reflect back to, I think a lot of it is just like also just ingrained in me. I mean, my mom was always like cooking, whether that was wild game or not. Like we never ate out as kids. She was always cooking, very like gardening a little bit, and just kind of very like stingy, I guess. And so I feel like some of that's come into play as well. Just trying to sometimes make the hard decision to not go out to eat and just like use what we have. But it's kind of just started to fuel itself, you know. Like I'm really excited about hunting. We have more game in the freezer. We should eat it. Then you start like experimenting and trying new recipes, and pretty soon that's like all we eat. And it feels like when I do go out or something and have like beef or chicken, it's just weird. Like I'm so used to pheasant or venison that it's starting to like, yeah, just shift my diet, I guess.
It's so I was just thinking about that the other day, because I'm, you know, you travel and move and all these things happen, and it's kind of like getting settled in a new place, and we've been eating out a lot more than we normally would. And I made a venison tamale pie for Meat Eater. I wrote that'll be out in a month or so. But I've been here by myself for like 4 or 5 days because my family's traveling, and so I've just been slowly like eating at this big cast iron cornbread meat pie, and it's literally phenomenal. And I'm like, oh man, I gotta make sure that I'm doing this more, because it's the same thing. You go out and eat somewhere, I go out and grab tacos or go grab a burger, and I'm like, it's okay, you know, but it definitely is not the great flavor of wild game that I enjoy. So looking at some of your recipes though, I think probably the one that I most recently you've posted is the venison pizza rolls, which is pretty awesome. That took me back some years to like primary school.
That ended up being one of our most popular posts of all time, I think. We got so many
Huh.
comments
Did it?
about that. Again, like, just people were going nuts over it, saving it,
We're
sending it to people.
going to have it tomorrow for dinner. We got the
Exactly.
wraps out, defrosting, and got the burger defrosting, so
Nice.
excited.
Yeah. Nice job, Kayla.
So, yeah, that was awesome. Walk me through how this came to fruition, and sort of like how you put all these pieces together to end up with this delicious treat.
Yeah, so I mean, I think if you've already seen my recipes, like I won't admit to being fancy at all, and in many cases they're not even really like, I guess, showcasing the wild game. It's just like we're always busy, we're always on the go. I basically just swap things for other dishes that I know, but definitely forces you to make them from scratch because you got to insert your own meat. But yeah, I was just in the freezer section getting ice cream because I love ice cream, but walked past the pizza rolls and was like, oh man, that brings me back. I don't know when I've last had pizza rolls. And I almost grabbed them, and then I was just like, we have a ton of, again, still kind of getting into all this, and I was really pretty intimidated by like sausage making. But this year, we took a bunch of venison and just made, we don't have a smoker, but we just made like a raw bulk sausage. So I did like 10 pounds of Italian sausage and 10 pounds of breakfast sausage. So just ground up venison with pork and then put in the seasoning. So we have this Italian sausage, and I was like, you know what? I feel like I could easily figure this out. Like, it wouldn't be that hard. There's not that many ingredients in pizza rolls. And sure enough, in the freezer aisle, I just Googled it quick, and I found this super easy recipe for pizza rolls. That was, of course, with pork Italian sausage. But yeah, it was just tomato sauce, Italian sausage, egg roll wrappers, and mozzarella cheese. So instead of grabbing the pizza roll box, I went and got the other things. And I mean, I figured like it can't really go wrong with those like four ingredients. Like, but yeah, they were delicious, super good. And I was just able to freeze, make a big batch because it's really tedious. It is really tedious to roll up those egg roll wrappers. So whenever I do stuff with those, I just try to make a bunch of it. But put a bunch in the freezer too, so can just pull those out on a busy night. But they were so good.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah, I man, I love the versatility of egg roll wrappers. Mm-hmm. It's always astounding what you can do with them. Just from like regular egg rolls to, you know, these pizza rolls are a perfect example, but you can literally use them for whatever.
Yeah, I have this isn't Wild Game, but I have a cheat like ravioli recipe where you just use egg roll wrappers to make. I always make like butternut squash ravioli.
That sounds good too.
But then you don't have to like make ravioli dough and roll it out. You just use. Actually, usually you buy wonton wrappers, which are the same thing, but they're just smaller.
Yeah, we have those. I think at the store here too. I was just noticing them. They sell like a huge pack of them, which I was like, oh wow. I could make a lot of fun things with those. So, and the next recipe I was looking at was your fish and chips recipe, which is it's a very interesting take on fish and chips. It's not as fish and chips as people think of it, though.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that article I just wrote about my experience lake trout fishing, I guess. And then I just made, I don't think I included the recipe with it. So I don't know if you want me to talk about the article or...
Yeah, let's talk about the article, and then if we feel like talking about the recipe, we'll go into it, but either way.
Okay, yeah. No, I just, lake trout fishing in the Boundary Waters with my brother, but yeah, when I got back, I just basically baked the lake trout and then, fried potatoes, which we used to have when I would go on fishing trips to Canada growing up. So nothing fancy there either, other than now I really like to pair it with white wine, but... yeah, kind of did a play on words, I guess, there just with the title because you want to talk about a wanderer. My brother is just unreal. I can hardly keep up with him. He's actually – so I've run a couple marathons, and now I feel like he's just putting me to shame because he's training right now for a marathon where you run it with a canoe on your shoulders.
What?
So it's just like, okay, well, there goes – my marathons mean nothing. he's crazy. So whenever I want a dose of wilderness or just extreme physical exertion, he's my guy, I guess. But yeah, did a Boundary Waters, which I guess if no one's been, just this really cool wilderness area in northern Minnesota. Actually, mm-hmm. have a summer trip there here in a couple weeks. But grew up eating some lake trout on our Canada trips in the summer, and it's been a long time since I've fished for lake trout in the winter in the Boundary Waters, but I had before, but it'd been too long, and so finally found a weekend to work out with my brother and just met him there, and it's like, we didn't end up camping in there, but a full day ordeal of like snowmobiling till you get to like the no motor line, and then we were supposed to cross country ski, but the snow was like really wet and sticky, so halfway through someone just like took off their skis and was like, yeah, this is way faster, just walking is way faster than skiing. So walked in a couple miles and we just got a miserable day. It was like wet, heavy snow all day. He caught one lake trout. I didn't catch any. And then the next day I had to head back, by like 11 or 12, but we just picked like a close lake near town where we didn't have to do the snowmobiles and hiking and just walked in and it was just like super sunny and calm and nice out. And I was like, I don't even care. It's just nice to not be like freezing cold and have snow pelting me in the face. And then caught a lake trout that morning. So yeah, it was just, I admit I hadn't eaten it in a while, hadn't had that experience in a while, and it's just such a beautiful place. And, kind of just all came together for a tasty meal, but I just kind of put a pun on words there with like a chip on my shoulder. Cause I don't know.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. People I work with were just like, you went through all that for one lake trout. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. Just that type of stuff just fuels me through the week. Like if I can do this stuff, I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the picture, the headline image, and it looks like I'm guessing that's probably your brother there that you're walking behind in the picture, and it's just like a big snowy.
Yeah.
Looks like you could tell it's just cold and damp and snow sticking to everything.
Yeah, ooh. Like your mittens. I had like big mittens on, and they were just like. Drenched by the end of the day, like just stop. There's no point even having them on because it's just a wet, heavy snow all day.
It's not seem enjoyable at all. The things we do to enjoy the great outdoors, right? Yeah. Awesome. Your other article that I wanted to chat about, and I think this is Corey brought up some points, but how to eat tag soup. Which I think is very interesting because people
there's a lot of animosity in the world with tag soup, but I don't know, Corey, you had a conversation starter surrounding that, didn't you?
Yeah, because you see a lot of things on social media where people don't take you seriously unless you harvest an animal, you know, turkey, deer, elk, whatever. Like, oh, you're not a real hunter unless you kill this or do that or whatever. But I think that creates monsters, you know, that do it for the gram. So you see those people running around with a fan on their head trying to get a turkey, but, you know, potentially can get shot in the face in the process. So in that article, you talked about how you know, you're almost physically ill when you're not successful. And I feel the same way, like you're scrolling through Facebook and, you know, it's after the first day of rifle season, you see, oh, he got a buck. Oh, he got a nice buck. And like, and when I don't get anything, I was like, okay, I got to get off social media and get away from that and, you know, just do my own thing. But yeah, I think you had a lot of good things to say in that piece.
Yeah, I have to imagine that, like, everyone deals with that, for sure. And yeah, I just went into turkey season super excited. It would have only been my third turkey season, but we had a really good year the year before, filled two tags, still had weeks left, so I was like, oh, I'm gonna get my tag, get an over-the-counter tag, offer to help some other people out just because I love being out there. And then it was just a super frustrating season. And a few things, like we had some wildfires close some areas that we usually hunt, and I had to work a day or two in there, so a few, like, on weekends, I guess, of course I also had to work during the week. A few other just, like, frustrating things, but, yeah, not for lack of effort. And, you get on social media and you get down on yourself. And I guess I know that my reason being out there is not to fill a tag. And I felt myself, I guess, just, like, getting caught up in that. And I don't know, it's almost like I knew early on I wasn't going to get one, even though there were still weeks left. And it's just, like, I let that negative attitude get to me, I guess. And towards the end, I just got off and knew I just wanted to be out there because I wanted to be out there, even if it wasn't going to end well. And yeah, something I guess I'm still trying to work on is just, I know I'm doing it for the right reasons. It's just like trying not to get caught up in, the pressure or any expectations to do anything.
It's one of those things, too, is it's hard because you never know what people go through, and you never know other people's situations whenever they post on social media. And it's that, I think that spans the internet in, you know, insert whatever situation it be. But I think speaking to our community in the hunting and fishing world, like, a lot of the times the majority of things you see are just people's successes. And it puts a challenging perspective of it. You know, I'm like the same. I'm the same, you know, going through. It's like, oh, man, like I when I was living in Florida, it was, you know, it's 4 or 5 hours to get up to a place to hunt. So you really have to commit. And here I am, like, you know, scrolling through Instagram or looking on Facebook, and I just see people like, bam, bam, bam. And I'm just like, man, I really wish, you know, you're like, oh, I wish I had that. Or maybe I'm paraphrasing for myself. But just thinking, like, it's definitely one of those things. And it's interesting, like, even as an adult, how that thought crosses my mind of just, like, not a jealousy or disdain or hate or, you know, anything like that. It's just like, it'd be cool if I, you know, I had a little, you know, a turkey or a deer to
yeah,
post on social media and talk with all my buddies about. But no, and I think you go through and you start looking at hunters and anglers abroad and around, and as people post different things, you can kind of see the visibility of different stages in their life and kind of what they're doing in the hunting world. And I don't know, I personally start to look for happiness and comfort in other areas. You know, in our spring bear trip, where I didn't necessarily feel the tag, but I definitely participated in all aspects of the hunt, so much so that I came away with this, like, look, I'm not going home with a bear trip. Like, I invested a lot of time and money and effort into this trip, but at the end of the day, like, the trip was phenomenal. And, you know, I didn't have a picture to post with the bear
on, you know, it was my own bear on social media, but whatever.
Yeah, just because you go out hunting and don't get anything doesn't mean you're not a hunter. You still did it, you know?
Exactly.
It's not like you're only a hunter once you're successful.
I would say that statistically, as you look across the board of, if you go into any hunting reports for any state, you're very rarely ever going to find a 100% success rate in any area, probably in the country.
I think the only times I've seen 100% are actually for the really difficult tags to draw. So like Oregon, mountain goat, and bighorn sheep tags are really hard to draw. They take like 20 years, and but there might be like three tags for one area, and sometimes those will be 100%, but that's because everybody gets a guide. Like if you get it, and it's a once in a lifetime tag, so like you get that, you're going to spend the money to get a guide, and there's the only time
I think
see
Pennsylvania
like
elk, at least the bull are nearly 100%, but I think hunting follows that 80-20 rule. 20% of the hunters kill 80% of the harvests. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I could see that, yeah. I think that makes sense.
So, yeah, I'll be looking for a redemption with my fall turkey tag. but it was a really good spring and just finally got a chance to just reflect back on all the cool moments, and like I ended that piece, I'm fortunate that my husband filled both his tags while I wasn't there, which sucks because I wasn't there for it, but so we did have some turkey in the freezer. But
that's awesome. Yeah. Which is that what you used for the wild turkey salad?
Yes. Yep. So yeah, basically just chicken salad essentially. So like craisins, almonds, mayonnaise, green onions. I do that a lot with pheasant too, but nice on the go lunches instead of like lunch meat or whatever for the boat or for turkey hunting after you already got one turkey. So, yeah.
So how do you rank, pheasant and turkey? Which one?
Oh, turkey for sure. Turkey is probably my favorite wild game meat, and I'm always just blown away. I've heard so many people say they don't like it, and I don't understand. I like it better than like store-bought turkey, and I think it's probably my favorite wild game meat, but I don't know what people's deal are.
I'm one of those people. I'm not a big fan
really?
Of turkey.
I don't understand. Like I it's crazy.
You just don't know how to cook, Justin.
You know, it is what it is.
What is it, like the flavor or the texture or what?
I don't know. It's really dry. Nice
one, Corey.
I don't know. Yeah, thanks, Corey. I don't know. For me, I don't know. Maybe I haven't shot a lot of turkey to enjoy it enough. I don't know. It's just not. I don't know. I ate turkey tag soup last year, and I think it just made me very frustrated. And
yeah. Well, if you think turkey's dry, then I wouldn't even try pheasant.
Yeah, I don't mind pheasant. I think, I don't know. I owe it to myself to try more turkey. Mm-hmm. I would say that.
Does Colorado have a turkey season?
No. Yep, they do. They have a fall and a spring. Actually, in my scouting of places for antelope, I found two places I can hunt turkey at. So I'll plan on doing that coming up. It's actually...
What's the species?
Good question.
It's got to be Rio Grande out there, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think it depends on where you're at in the state. Go ahead, Corey, with your thought. I'll answer this question as I look it up.
Well, Kayla has mentioned what was in her freezer on a couple different occasions. You said you had a full freezer. I just want to know what all is included in that.
So, yeah, both of us filled our rifle deer tags anyways last year. So, well, now that's probably more than halfway gone. But so deer, lots of, well, I think we've eaten a fair amount of pheasants too, but there was a lot of pheasant in there. Some ducks and Canada geese and snow geese. We had my cousin, so nonprofits can like apply for to draw like a big game tag in North Dakota to then raffle off. And when I was working for Pheasants Forever, we drew an antelope tag and then raffled it off. And my cousin that I'm actually going elk hunting with won the raffle, which was cool. So, because it's, I still haven't hunted antelope at all, but not in North Dakota either, because it takes like 5 to 8 years or more, depending which unit you're applying in.
Oh, wow.
So pretty cool that she got to, she lives in Minnesota, and she got to come here and hunt them before me. But she was successful, so she gave us half of that. So we have a little bit of that left. We've been kind of using it sparingly. Lots of, now catfish, but lots of fish, walleye, northern pike. Trying to think what other, well, there's turkey in there. Still from my husband's spring turkey. Anything else? The doves are gone. There were doves. And my husband actually leaves tomorrow to go to Alaska caribou hunting. So hopefully.
Ooh, cool.
Oh, nice. You don't get to go with them?
And I told him to just tag out early and then go halibut fishing. So
yeah,
that's the plan.
So what's on the menu next? What are you cooking up next, do you think?
I was thinking, actually, was this on... Okay, so I can't remember if this is Harvesting Nature or Hunt to Eat, but I saw, like, a venison gyro recipe. I want to say it was Harvesting Nature, though, but I've been meaning to make gyros for a while, but this one, the recipe I was looking at was, like, using ground meat, pressing it into a pan, and then baking it so almost like a thin meatloaf, and then frying the strips. But this recipe was just using ground meat, so I was going to give that a go.
I'm not sure. I don't see it on ours. Must be... Maybe it was
Hunt to Eat. I feel
like
I just saw it.
I'm trying to think. Well, it's not my recipe, but yeah, I've been looking at
it. It's all right, though. That's good. Well, sweet. Well, so unfortunately we are out of time, so this is the point in the show where we all kind of give a round of our last thoughts, and since you're the guest today, Kayla, I'll open it up to you. Do you have any last thoughts or alibis or anything you want to leave us, the listeners, with?
You know, I have nothing too crazy. Thanks for having me on. I get into this a little bit in the latest article that I just wrote, but for sure, I'm still working on this, like, definitely not excluding myself from this. But I think just the whole catfishing thing just kind of opened my eyes to, like, all the just opinions and norms that are out there. And I feel like as hunters and anglers, we're so quick to judge everybody else, like, just about every little thing. And, like, my example was catfishing and just kind of sticking your nose up at it. And if it's not a walleye here, nobody cares. But I think we could all just be more open-minded and accept what our kind of hunting ethos is and maybe what someone else's is. And we should all be on the same team for just, like, wildlife conservation, continuing our hunting and fishing heritage. And it's okay if people kind of have different desires that they want out of their experience. And we don't need to constantly, like, judge everyone, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, agreed. Support that 100%. All right, Colin, last thought.
It's a great conversation, but to echo what Kayla just said at the very end, I mean, we're harvesting nature, so we're harvesting everything. It's not, we're not elk hunters, you know, supreme. We're not like ultimate deer hunters. You know, we're everything. So whether you're picking berries on a hike or you're harvesting the big muley or something like that, it's everything involved. So as a fellow adult onset hunter, I think it's a good lesson to keep in mind. So when you're scrolling through Instagram and you see all these people with these giant elks and giant deer and everything, just keep that in mind.
Yeah. Corey, last thought?
Just want to say thank you to Kayla for coming on, and enjoyed talking to you, and glad you're a part of Harvest in Nature. And I'm looking forward to reading more of your stuff. And, yeah, good luck this hunting season.
Thanks.
So I will say, first off, it's Merriam's, Merriam's and Rio Grande. So Merriam's up in the mountains, and Rio Grande's more in eastern. So I'll probably encounter some Rios.
I was half right.
Which is cool. Huh?
I was half right.
Yeah. Halfway. Well, Kayla, thanks for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. I've loved all your articles I've read, all the recipes too. It's really great. So please keep up the great work, and I think you're a great ambassador for
for our community, and I appreciate your contributions to Harvesting Nature and all those awesome things that you've been doing. You know, I would encourage everybody to go take a peek at your Instagram page. What's the best way for people to connect with you if they have questions or?
Yeah, probably Instagram. I feel like that's my favorite social media handle, and I put a lot more hunting stuff on there than my Facebook. But it's at Kayla Rose Ruby. Those are my middle names, but Kayla is with a C, so CaylaRoseRuby.
Awesome. And as always, you can read her her recipes or adventures articles every month over at Harvest of Nature. So you can go, if you find one of her articles on there, like the pizza rolls, you can click there and click her profile, and it shows all the articles that she's written. So you can read through those. Great reads. But yeah, thanks again for coming on the show. And I do want to, as we get out of here, hit one last thing. So since pronghorn season is just right around the corner, make sure you go over to Harvest Nature, our website, in the shop, and you check out our pronghorn fast food t-shirt. I have one. I wear it all the time. It's an antelope head in the shape of a very prominent fast food establishment, but... saying that antelope is the only fast food I eat. So that's my personal little tribute from our antelope hunt last year in Wyoming. So for those that have seen the shirt, it's pretty cool. If not, go check it out. Get yourself one. And thanks everybody else for listening. And as always, show notes are listed down below. So all the links to the recipes and articles and all the crazy things we talked about today are there. And then... after you've checked out Kayla's social media page, make sure you're following us on Harvesting Nature, all the different platforms. And then whatever podcast platform you listen to, punch that 5-star button, leave us a review, tell us what we're wrong, or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody, and have a good night.